Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey everyone, before we get started today, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters, could be us, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and every other platform. And the best part, you get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance to this program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. 191. Today's Wash Up Walk-Ons features Cole Fisher, a guy from Nebraska who truly epitomized the student athlete and spent a ton of time on school, finally got his chance on the football field in 2015 and turned it into a magical year and really a validation year for himself. Let's sit back, relax, and have a day. Let's go. Welcome into the Wash Up Walk-Ons, episode 191 of the podcast. Today, we have Cole Fisher with us, a guy that we stole from across enemy lines over in Omaha, Nebraska. He fought his way to a starting position his senior year after 4 years of grinding. One of the most intellectual guys that we played with. Cole, we are so excited to have you. This is going to be really, really fun today.
Yeah, no problem.
I want to start by backing it all the way up to high school quick and just quickly touching on how you got to Iowa.
Yeah.
Recruitment, other opportunities, how you found your way to Iowa City.
Sure. So I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. Went to high school at Millen North.
Boo.
Yeah, exactly. So whenever I say that, obviously everyone's first reaction is, why didn't you go to Nebraska? And grew up a Nebraska fan. Dad played there in the early 80s. I actually had an older brother, Sean, who played there. We even got to play against each other my sophomore season. And I always thought I would end up there, actually. And
was that the dream?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, you grow up, that's any kid who grows up in Nebraska dream if they're playing football.
Right.
So, I mean, family ties just add to that. And going into junior year, Iowa was actually the first one to offer after my junior tape. And Kansas followed them. But then junior year in basketball, ended up tearing an ACL. which is annoying. As you know, you go through all these football games and whatnot, and you tear it in basketball and no contact or anything. But the thing about what Coach Ferentz did actually the next day was shot me a call and saying, "Hey, this changes nothing. We still want you to come to Iowa," and which played a huge part in that. Probably sealed the deal, honestly, when he did that, because every other school, including Nebraska, was saying, you know, we want to see how you come back your senior year from your injury and see how that goes. So,
holy shit.
Yeah. What?
That's, I mean, it seems like every time we do one of these, every single guy has something like that Coach Ferentz did.
Mm-hmm.
And he just continues to prove that he's just a different guy. Like he is.
Sure.
What was your first impression of Coach Ferentz, and what do you think of him now after playing for him for 5 years? How did he impact you as a person?
First impression, you know, I remember one of the very first conversations I had, we were up in the press box and it was a recruiting event. And I just remember thinking that this guy, I feel like he thinks I'm way funnier than I actually am right now. And he kept doing his laugh. That's like, I mean, you guys know it.
Yeah. You're so right. That was dead on. He like closes his mouth.
Yeah.
Damn, that's an impression that hasn't hit the podcast yet. That's fucking
really
good. Yeah, oh, I don't do the laugh. Like, I'll do the KF voice, like the, oh, shit, all right.
Yeah, you know? I could have closed my eyes and been back in a theater.
Yes. And so I'm sitting there and I keep seeing him do this laugh and I'm just dying on the inside. But it was a great conversation with him. Definitely a better one that I had with other coaches. So it made it feel right initially. And then obviously going forward, you know, he's just one of those guys that truly cares, you know? And I guess throughout my career, the big thing that I guess I had to sell with the coaches was kind of breaking that stigma that with engineering, I think the stigma around me was that I cared more about school than I did about football at times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might be a bit biased on this, obviously, but I probably had a bit more of a studying commitment than most guys on the team.
It's something that I'm excited to get into with you and your philosophy on it, because
you certainly studied more than Tyler did in college. We'll
you fucking dude, you studied infinity times more than I did.
Yeah, it was worth it. But yeah, there were definitely times I look back and just, I mean, especially that senior year, being able to finally play and all that. But we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But with Coach Ferentz, I mean, obviously just him sticking with me through that whole time. I mean, I did at one point sit down and we did have the talk after that junior year about, hey, we're going to need to see some better performance out of you in the off season, or we're going to start thinking about giving your scholarship to someone else and you'll just have you finish out. But I mean, through all that, you know, he stuck with it, stuck with me and ended up having a hell of a finish to the whole career.
I found that tidbit about you. It said in the article that Coach Reed came to you and said, like, hey, me and the coaching staff, in fact, I'll read it word for word because I put it down. Said in the article, Reed told you, Cole, that the coaches wanted to see how he did in fall camp, and they would decide from there whether or not they would have him graduate early and forego his final year of eligibility.
Yeah.
And that shocked me a little bit, because I don't think I've heard another guy with that story of where the coaches actually, at Iowa at least, I know it happens other places, but I don't think I've heard another guy or know of another teammate that we had who had that story where they came to him and they were like, I'm sure it's happened, but they came to him and was like, hey, you know, we want to throw this scally at somebody else. Like, you need to do better. What was that day like?
Oh, just a huge wake up call. I mean, like a splash of cold water in the face. You know, it shocked me initially, but I could, at the same time, I could see where they were coming from.
Mm-hmm. What I mean, was this 2014?
Yeah, this would have been – so I was initially, yeah, the winter 2014.
So going into your final year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, cool. We want to circle back to that. I want to go all the way back to when you got there in 2011, right? It was your first season.
Mm-hmm.
And redshirted, obviously, like most guys do. What were, you know, because I imagine I didn't go back and like watch the Cole Fisher high school highlight tape, but I have to imagine, I saw the stats, three year starter, 60 tackles, 90 tackles, 90 tackles, ended up being all state, all that, like most guys who end up in Iowa City or at the Division I level. What was it like transitioning into college that first season and kind of seeing what Big Ten football looked like? I'm sure you had heard from your older brother a little bit. Obviously it ran in the family. And so it's not like such a shock, but there's still a shock for every guy. And I still remember like my first holy shit moment, as I sat there on day three of camp in one of those, player vans, and Murph was driving me, Sheriff, and Van Sloten to like a meal at Hillcrest. And I was sitting, it was just us three, because it was one of the vans where they were using like the back for transport of like equipment. Mm-hmm. And Sloat and Sheriff had jumped in the back of the van. There's only a spot for three people, and I was a small guy, and they knew that if they couldn't get another lineman in there and they could get a little room on their 3-minute trip, that'd be great. So Sheriff, 3 days in, yells, "Kluver, get the fuck in the van." And I'm like, "Yep, okay, cool, I'm in." And I'm sitting scrunched in between Sheriff and Van Sloten, and I'm like, "I'm here. Like, okay, we're here. This is Big Ten football, and I'm living it." Is there any moments like that for you in that first year where you were, could have been like in practice or whatever, where you were just like, "Wow, this is really happening"?
The biggest wake up call. I mean, so I guess I started out as a safety.
Really?
Yeah, with Coach Parker.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. They originally saw me moving over to linebacker, but when I first came in, I was 205, 210 maybe.
Yeah.
And I don't know, over the course of camp, put on like 8 pounds just in camp. I have no idea how.
You put on 8 pounds in camp?
Yeah. Next thing I knew, I was like 218. And then they're like, "Okay, well, maybe we'll transition you to the linebackers now."
You're too slow.
It'll be all right. I was too slow. I will not. Yeah. I will not deny that. But God, yeah, when they did that, so I mean, obviously camp is gonna smack any freshman in the face, because it's just nothing you've experienced before. I mean, you're locked away in this hotel, and life just sucks for, what a 2.5 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah, almost 3 weeks, I think, back in that day.
And so yeah, getting through. I don't know if I really had like a whole shit moment then, but like getting on the scout team and Riley Reef, great guy.
Like, still really playing.
Bad. Still playing. Yes. just a dick on the field. And I mean that with the utmost respect too, like great player, but just played like a dick on the field. And being on the scout team and going up against him the first time. And I think what he did, so it goes in, engages the block, yep, stuns the crap out of me just from the initial hit, and extends me, like drives me a little bit, and then pulls me back in for like another headbutt. and then just throws me on the ground. And I'm just sitting there like a rag doll, thinking like, "What in the shit just happened?" Like, just no idea where I am. And I mean, that continued to happen the whole entire year, but like that was just the first time. It's like, this is a completely different level.
I think more than anything, those linebackers, and we have so many on, like, we had similar stories with Travis, Bo, Josie, Neiman, all those guys, because you get thrown in the absolute fire. Like, not only are you younger playing scout team against the starting offense, but just that position in general takes a lot to get on the same level, to be able to compete linebacker to because linebacker to offensive lineman, until you learn the defense and you can be ahead of the game mentally,
sure,
and then you learn the physical skills to be able to beat a guy that's bigger than you, you are disadvantaged by a million.
Oh, sure. Especially when, like I said, I played safety in high school, free safety. Was playing safety and for part of camp. And so being in gauge with 300-pound people was not something I was used to.
Yeah.
Oh, Fish, you want to hear something funny?
What's that?
Drake's
fucking... So blocks drill. When I first got in, when I just first got introduced to blocks drill, never did it in high school. They were talking about how, you know, you're 3 points of contact, how you're trying to run through their face and you have to stun them, right? I thought they really truly meant that you had to run up this guy every single time and headbutt him as hard as you could to stun him. So what was I doing? I was running up and trying to get my 3 points of contact, and point number one was my forehead as hard as it possibly could be.
Yep.
Now, somehow Drake came out of the linebacking slash fullback position after 5 years, maybe a little worse off than you did, Cole, because somehow, like, your brain is still there. And good for that. And this plays a huge role in your story at Iowa, because as you mentioned and as we alluded to, you were you truly were a guy who took the student athlete term and made it real. You redshirted in 2011, and then you got on the field in your redshirt freshman year. You were playing special teams. And I'd love to hear about that and you know, the first time you got to actually play a play. And but you kind of stayed in that same role. I mean, you became more prominent in special teams, but you were still in that special teams role and weren't able to break through into the linebacking core until that special year we had in 2015. And a lot of that was because you were, at least, you know, the way that all the reporters put it out there, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well. Like, you were really focused on school and you had a major that didn't allow for it quite as much time when we were away from football. And I'd love to hear in your words how that impacted you and how you managed that throughout your career and then how you broke through finally in 2015.
Yeah, so I guess for people that don't know, I was in the engineering school. It was a civil engineering major, and then a structural engineering, more specifically in civil. Civil is a pretty broad term. And so because of that, the workload for any engineering degree is pretty hefty. And it's kind of a funny story about it. So like when you're going through recruitment, they tell you like, oh yeah, engineering, it's completely doable with football. Look at all these guys we've had in the past that do this. And
right.
And I don't know if I ever actually got to talk to any of those guys. But so like they did that to me then for when new kids were coming, like, oh, this guy wants to be an engineer.
Yeah, look, Cole Fisher, he's doing it now.
And I tried to be as realistic as possible with them. And it was basically like, hey, they're going to tell you this is doable. And it is. And I've been through it. I did it. But there are going to come times, like, you have two huge major commitments. There are going to come times when you have to choose between school or football. And for me, I was just on special teams. So I was choosing a lot of school really, really early. And
smart man.
I mean, it's like I said, they like to make you think that there's time for both and there's not. And at one point, one of them's going to suffer. And for me, that was just football for the first 3 years. And then my senior year, what happened was, so I had gone 4 years. I had two classes left to take for that senior year. I had an elective, which was the history of magic in the Middle Ages.
So, history of magic.
Oh, yeah, man. For me, taking all these classes over the years, like.
Tell me you don't want to take class about Harry Potter, bro.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, Cole was fucking learning about Wingardium Leviosa.
So that was a huge 180 from what I was used to. And then the second was like a sophomore level, like introduction to CAD basically, which wasn't hard at all by that.
How refreshing was it to be able to devote your entire life to only one thing then?
Oh my gosh, man. Well, that's why I was able to have such a successful senior year, was because for the first time I was not focused on school barely at all. I had class, those two classes too, they were Tuesday, Thursday classes. I didn't have class for 3 days of the week.
Love that.
Yeah. And work, I mean, there was basically no homework. Was really just to dive in and focus on watching the film, preparing for the game each week, and just football.
It's amazing. I have to imagine that, you know, you redshirt 2011, you get on the field and dip your toe into the special teams in 2012. You're more prominent in 2013, which would have been our first year. Mm-hmm. And probably like what we used to call the Savage Back, which is Savage Back. And it's kind of something that Gervais and Kevin Ward came up with.
Okay. It's a really good way to describe a shit player that's trying to be a great player.
It's a four-phase special teamer that plays on all four phases and starts, but doesn't see the field on offense or defense. It's a new position we created. And at one point, Kevin basically was that guy for his entire career. And then Gervais was for a while until he took over starting safety role. There's always one, right? There's always
which
one
is
or two.
Precisely why we let everybody know how big of a shit player you have to be part of those two groups. Well, not you're included, Cole. You don't.
But you were that guy. Like you were the four phase special teamer.
Good save.
And so I have to imagine as 2014 rolls around, and now you're competing with for that new job, right? Like we just had Morris, Kirksey, Hitchens leave. Very hard for anybody to break through.
Yeah. Also, what does it feel like to sit on the bench behind those guys in a time where you can actually play? Because right. We all sat on the bench and we couldn't play, and we just got to watch those guys be gods. But like everybody else in the team had to actually compete against those guys trying to get on the field. Like that had to feel like trying to climb Mount Everest, because those were three All-Americans legit.
Yeah. And I mean, sure, maybe a little bit, but at the same time, it was almost better than what I experienced then in 2014, just because I was very realistic. I was like, okay, well, these guys obviously are all clearly going to play in the NFL.
Right.
I might as well just learn as much as I can from them and try to take as much knowledge and everything until they move on, and then use that. But then in 2014, I had another huge wake-up call, and because Reggie Spearman came into the program.
Yep.
And had played some the year before, and then he dove right into that Will linebacker role, which for someone who was a couple grades older, and I think like a lot of years older, he was pretty young, and I was kind of old for right. our class anyways. So that was really tough seeing and really frustrating. But you know, it's part of the gig sometimes. And I think that was also why the coaches at the end of the season, you know, sat down, said like, hey, this is what's going on. We need you to kick it up a notch here.
Did you feel how did you deal with that? Cause I think that's a huge, you look at a lot of guys nowadays, right? You know, mm-hmm. you're 3 years into the program, you know, your time is ticking, as they say. And a lot of guys would pack it up and go find a spot somewhere else or try. What was the mentality? I mean, there had to be days where you were just like, damn it, this is bullshit. Like, I deserve that spot. Like, how do you deal with that mentally?
Ooh, there were a couple not so great times. I know, God, I remember one specifically coming home, and Nate Meyer was one of my roommates, him and Dalton Shaw. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home after a practice, and again, like, was frustrating on my end, was watching him excel. we had this fence in the backyard, just a typical fence. And I was just pissed and frustrated. And I was outside. And the next thing you know, I'm just beating the shit out of this fence, which is very unlike me. Like, I'm not one who's just going to go and start hammering something with my fist to try to get ready.
General managers ask questions to find the right players. Like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Out of any sort of anger, but sure enough, there I was in the backyard, just beating the shit out of this fence for no reason. And Hanhart felt like shit afterwards, of course, and but then, you know, Nate and I just kind of sat down and had a conversation, and I'm sitting there telling him, like, you know, I'm just running out of time here, man, and I don't know what to do, and it's super frustrating. So there were some dark times, and but I guess the biggest thing I can take away from my career was just perseverance and sticking with it when times were shitty, and I guess it all pays off in the end as long as you keep putting in the hard work.
Yeah, we've brought on a couple guys recently that talked about like because it's easy from the outside for people to look at your life, even on that specific day, right? Like, who knows what you had going on that day? Maybe you went and grabbed food down the street at Poncheros, or you went to class or whatever. And from the outside looking in, guys, anyone, regular students on campus, fans, it's like, oh, he's living the dream, man. He's living the dream. Gets to be an Iowa linebacker. Gets to wear it. And to some extent, like, every day you are in that program, you are grateful. But there's another side to it that's like, this is taking me down a real rough path here that is really challenging, more so than what any normal person is experiencing. And it's kind of fucking me up. And sometimes to hear about those is interesting, and how guys dealt, because it's not always just like rainbows and unicorns, you know?
Oh, no, for sure. And I mean, if anything, the one thing you take away from that is it forces you to grow up way, way fast. And yep. Definitely not a bad thing. I mean, you watch, or you sit around and look at the majority of kids that are in college these days, and you know, they're trying to maybe figure out life, but really they're, you know, you're going to school or going to class half the time and then getting shit faced on the weekends. And I don't know, maybe even during the week, but
a lot of them during the week. Yeah.
A lot of them during the week. Yeah, I don't know. I said maybe.
Why do you think so many people come out of college with alcoholism, dude? They literally party every single night because they get done with school and they're like, well, this is college. My mom's not here, and I like getting fucked up. So,
yeah. What do I do now?
Yeah, so 2014 rolls by, and then you have that conversation that we had previously mentioned, and I also read in an article, because there's got to be, for a lot of guys, there's a time where it's like, okay, do I hang it up? Like, was there ever a real moment where you were like, I'm leaning here towards, I'm not going to finish my career as a Hawkeye football player. Like, I'm just going to go do school.
Ooh. There were times where, like, I would want to, and how I was thinking it would be so much easier to do school, mm-hmm. And not to just do school and not have to worry about football. But it's hard to also sit there. I think I was also very realistic in that I wasn't going to let go of a scholarship that was leading to free school.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, there was always that. It wasn't like I had walked on and was just putting up with this on the side.
Yeah, those fucking walk-ons. God damn it.
Scrubs. Scruggs.
No, seriously, props to you guys for
hey, you know what's worse than being a savage back?
What's that?
Being a fucking walk-on, dude.
Sometimes,
yeah, I was about to ask him a question, but then I had to make that joke and I forgot what my question was. It had something to do with the conversation.
I'll let you.
Oh, yeah, it was. Okay. If you were going to either go back and tell your old self or go back and tell, or just now tell somebody who is looking to do something that you did, would you say, I recommend you don't do it? And I think you should either choose one or the other as your passion and let kind of slide in the other area so that you can truly focus on that singular one? Or would you be like, you know what, try and undertake the entire gallon of ice cream, and if you get sick at the end, like, you're at the end?
That's a good question, man. So Probably two parts here. So simply because of that senior year and playing linebacker the whole entire year. I mean, obviously we had a great year.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Bro, you made the play on the sideline to beat Wisconsin and take home the bowl for the first time in like 5 years, and the only time in the last 5 years or something like that.
I don't know if that was – I think that was more Nate, actually.
Hey, dude, whatever happened, you were there, weren't you?
I suppose, dude pushed off like a son of a bitch from what I remember, but
yeah, he did.
I lost a train of thought. That was the same. Oh, so if I go back and tell myself, this is going to sound bad, especially with how much how long I put school a priority, but I would totally say, just because of what I experienced my senior year and how much fun that was, I would probably tell myself, take a little time away from school from time to time and try to focus on football more. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I say that is one, because of the senior year, and also two, once you get into the working world and have a job, no one really cares about how well you did in school. It's all about experience.
Yep.
And so, you know, maybe, I guess you run the risk of maybe not getting that same job, but it's just such a give and take. And
what you're telling us right here is that
what football taught you
and the successes of what football taught you and the trials and tribulations of what football taught you are greater than what you can get in a college education.
I don't think it's 100% that black and white, but to some extent, yeah.
But
in those categories.
Yeah.
Just in those particular categories. Experience, trials and tribulations, like, an engineering degree will put you through trials and tribulations by itself.
Sure.
So will a career at Iowa football. They'll both give you highs, walking across the stage, almost, or, you know, I guess going 12-0, et cetera, et cetera. But which one is more important to life?
That's a wow. I mean, you take so many lessons from both. Football taught me a lot of life lessons. School taught me a lot about what I need to use in my career moving forward. I mean, football does end at some point for everyone. Sometimes it's earlier than you want it to be, but
what your soul looks like does not end. So like, you just are a gritty, go get it old bastard now. And that's for the rest of your life. Whereas it may not have been that way. That's kind of where my question was headed.
I just think, I don't know, at the end of the day, it's a give and take. Like, you learn from each has their own role in your life. And you just use them moving forward as you can for each of them. But you're trying to like make me choose one here. And I don't know if there's really a choice. Like,
yeah, I was just going to say, he went through 5 years of not choosing one and trying to do both. I don't think he's going to choose one here. Finally.
I was trying to get him to choose one, man. I was trying to get him to give some advice to the youngsters.
I think it's an interesting dynamic. You more than anybody are someone who, 'cause a lot of guys who go that route and choose to go heavy on school and they do kind of hang out and they don't start, or, you know, they don't get the playing time they wish they were, they do end up choosing one or the other. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to hear a perspective of someone who ran the whole race, as coaches would used to say, in both segments. Mm-hmm. 2015 rolls around, and in that offseason, you have the conversation, hey, we might be giving your scholarship to somebody else. You need to step it up. Immediately, I have to think that, you know, those 8 weeks before spring ball in the winter, those suddenly get a whole lot more determined and intense for you. And then that spring ball becomes ever so important. Did you feel the opportunity that you eventually got, your name, the starter for 2015 senior season, which I'm sure had to have been a fucking relief, a big time, like, shit, I finally did it. Did you feel that coming on earlier in the year? Could you feel it building? Or when you got there, was it like, holy shit, like, I really didn't know if this was coming, and it did, and I'm real happy about it?
Honestly, it was building up to it, and I could feel the tides kind of turning when it, I mean, so that spring I finally had a really good spot. I was playing Leo, I guess, still at the time. But the biggest thing with it was I don't know if that conversation caused me a whole ton of pressure. I think it was more to the point where I was like, all right, you're going to do this or you're not. And so it almost like it took off the pressure. And I just started to relax, and I played a whole lot better because I wasn't so uptight about everything.
Right.
And so that spring ball ended up playing pretty well. And then going into camp, they eventually moved me over to Will. Bo was kind of struggling with the position. Just like I said, was just relaxed. Wasn't worried about school.
Which,
just,
funny enough, he's actually an engineer now too.
Bo is?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Doesn't have the degree, but somehow
the kid outkicked his coverage.
This is gonna piss you off to the max, dude. Actually, this is ironic as hell now that I think about it. He has, I don't know what his actual title is, but he has some job that is like, technically he's a civil engineer, I think.
No kidding.
Yeah. He completely 180'd like his life and where it was at. And he's now fucking civil engineer in Colorado.
Absolute workaholic, just like all the other engineers.
Dang, good for him.
Surprising, I mean, right? Because that guy. I don't know.
There's, like I said, civil's a really, really broad term.
And I don't know what he does. I still don't, but.
He works on a lot of roadways. You see him out in the middle of desolate areas working on a lot of roadways.
That makes sense.
But yeah, that's where he's at now. But yeah, so you finally get there and you're like, was it validation? Did it feel like, oh fuck, I got the crown at the end of the race here, and I've, or did it still feel like you were working to prove like I earned this spot, I need to keep this spot kind of thing?
It still definitely felt like I was working to it. It's made it seem, or I was, in my head I was thinking, okay, well now if I play like crap for one of these games, is this still gonna be my spot? Just because it's been so long and to even be named that starter. Thankfully we play what, Illinois State the first game, and defense as a whole played awesome against them, and I had a fairly decent game too to start off the year, so everything started clicking from then on out. But yeah, it was not like an initial weight off the shoulders. It was still me sitting there thinking this could very much be taken away at any moment.
Mm-hmm. So 2015, you start the whole year. You end up getting the Coach's Appreciation Award, the Finish Strong Award. You were honorable mention all Big Ten. And, you started every game. Not only that, but you had two games in particular that were really, I mean, in your mind, maybe a couple other different ones stick out. But stat-wise, Drake mentioned it already, you were there at the end of the Wisconsin game in the thick of it. You had your most tackles ever in that game with 14. What do you remember about that game, as that game was sort of the turning point of the season? And at least to me, when I felt like us as a team started to feel like, oh shit, like we might be able to do something this year.
Hey, I didn't realize it was 14 that game. That game in general was just a dogfight, man. That was just, and that's Wisconsin football. You know, it's power football. You're down in the trenches. And we run a very similar offense in that we try to set up the run first. And so, it's what it was 6-7, I think was the final.
10-6.
What's that?
10-6.
10-6. Jeez. But yeah, the only thing I just remember that being a dogfight. It was nonstop, big ass linemen, power football. And I mean, we had some huge stops on the goal line too. And that, I remember Nate being like,
your boy Nate was big time on that fumble from Stavi.
Yeah,
big time.
He literally pushed the guard into, he blew the guard back to the point where he stepped on Stavi's foot, and that's what caused the fumble.
Because you remember how Nate used to play those when he got in a 4-point stance and put his nose on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
He just blew the dude up.
Little bulldog.
He was different. We might have a Nate Meyer light on the team right now in Joe Evans. There's an undersized lineman who was a quarterback in high school, a 220-pound quarterback in high school, stud in Ames, and they moved him to linebacker athlete when he came in, and then they moved him almost immediately to like a rush D end, and he's playing at like 248. 6'2", 248, and he's been pretty effective through 2 years of playing time.
Dang, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Pretty quick then, I assume.
He's fast. He plays a little bit like Nate, like grind it out, just absolute motor.
I have a hard time believing he's as crazy of an old bastard.
He's definitely not as crazy as Nate. I mean, Nate was a different dude.
Nate's been getting a lot of airtime on the pod lately. There's been some good Nate Meyer stories lately.
Do you have any all time Nate Meyer stories, Cole?
Oh God,
I'm sure there's plenty that can't be told.
Yeah, those are the ones that are going through my head right now. It's probably stories that are not so great to tell to your guys' audience. But let me think on that one and come back. Let me pick one to come back.
But back to the Wisconsin 14 tackles. We start to really turn it around, and I mean, week after week, I don't know how you were processing it as it went on. It was almost surreal, right? We would win another game. You know, we beat Wisconsin, and then I think we actually played, I don't know who we played after that, but it was Illinois, yeah. Because then Drew tore his, tore his ACL in that game. And we beat Illinois, and then we played somebody else and we beat them. I think it was Northwestern.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, we've won six. Okay. Now we've won seven. We play. I remember we play Indiana, which was a big game for you guys defensively because they had an offense that could score at will on everybody that year. And it was like, okay, we're going to figure it out. Like our offense is going to match their offense defense. You're going to find a way to get it done. We won 9. We won 10 versus Minnesota. What was it like as a senior leader? Because you're in a leadership spot, right? Like you're in a starting role. You have more experience on special teams and now defense combined than most people. What is it like now at that stage for you as you remember it, as we just keep winning games?
Yeah, so I think the mindset was that Wisconsin game was the big turning point. And once we got that, I think looking forward, then it was, all right, this Northwestern game. If we can get past that, it looks like we have a chance to make this undefeated season a reality.
Dude, and when we got that done and he gave us the bye week off, and oh my God, going into that 8-0 was absolutely incredible.
For sure. Yeah, that was – and especially the way we did it too. Like we took care of them very, very easily. And – everyone was just playing at such a high level. I know towards the end of the season, it's a long season. People are starting to get banged up. And I think on defense, we were kind of held together by duct tape towards the end, it seemed like. But, I mean, yeah, it's surreal is a good way to put it. Just each game, trying not to get, like, too wrapped up in the bubble of it all and keep your nose to the grindstone. But at the same time, you're sitting there like, well, this is also kind of doable right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's the same feeling that – so I remember Kevin and I would wake up on Sundays after the win and we'd turn on, like, the Big Ten recap or whatever on Big Ten Network. And then obviously, like, we were the story after we were 5-6-0, we were kind of the story each week, like Iowa wins again, Iowa wins again. Then they would look and they would kind of break down, like, here's their next few games. It could be Iowa could continue to win and go undefeated. Like, there, this could be a special season. And every morning, Kevin and I would just be watching it and, like, look over at each other and say, is this happening? Like, is this happening right now? Like, mm-hmm. What the fuck is going on? And I have to imagine as a senior, as a guy that was older last year, especially with your story, you know, at you've come this far, you finally made it to that starting role, you're getting the playing time, and now this is the season that's occurring is it had to be unbelievable.
Yeah, I think they're towards the end. I think it came out in an interview after Nebraska where I just described it as like it was just one big giant dream. And I mean, you really, it's a very simple way to put it, but to have that be to work so hard for so long and so much frustration along the way, and then finally senior year to get the shot, and then that's the season we have. There's really no other way to put it than it's just like a dream come true. And very surreal. I can see
your mind working back through it as I bring it up, and
I haven't really like thought about all this stuff for a while. This is bringing back a lot of memories that a lot of good times for sure that I haven't thought about in a while.
We finished the season in a fucking tundra Lincoln, Nebraska, mm-hmm. which is again almost poetic when it comes to your story. I remember you, Drew, and Budgeta all being pivotal guys on our defense that year and in the program, and all from Nebraska. And there's just that little extra, right? Like, it's that extra storyline. What was it like? What do you remember for that game? First of all, you had a pick, I think your first pick of like your career.
One and only.
And yeah, your only pick of your career comes from the Nebraska game. It's cold as shit. We win the game and complete the perfect season. And I remember the emotion after the game of Budgeta, and it was a really cool moment. What do you remember from that game?
I remember just basically kind of, I know everyone else ran down to the trophy. I did not. I eventually got down there, but I honestly just kind of like remember sitting there at midfield and just like looking around. Cause this is the stadium that I've sat in, watched multiple games growing up. And then now I'm on the other side. I'm on a different team that I didn't think I was going to be playing for, you know, or when I'm sitting there thinking it as a kid. And now we just completed a 12-0 season by beating Nebraska at their home stadium. And I just sat there and took it in at midfield. Like, just sat there, watched all the fans as they were filing out, which I guess they'd been doing that in the process before anyways. But yeah, it was a cool moment, man. It was something that I'll definitely remember for the rest of my life. And like I said, I just sat there in midfield and had to take it in by myself for a moment.
That's cool. I did the same thing when we beat Ohio State and Kinnick. I just, when everybody went out onto the field, I went back into the stands and I just sat down in the stands and watched insanity ensue. And it was so awesome to just, I don't know, sit there and reflect and just be like, I truly cannot believe this just happened.
I bet, man. God, that was at home. You guys had everyone storming the field. That'd be an awesome, awesome environment.
It was pretty wild. There's just those few moments that are best described as surreal. There's really no words to put to them. And that was one of those for sure. I hate to bring it up. The Big Ten Championship is one of the most crushing feelings, potentially the most crushing feeling that I've ever felt. How did you process that game and what happened and just like, you know, the so close nature of it, and what do you take away from that experience?
So, I mean, I don't know, with that game, we knew it was going to be a dogfight going in. I mean, they were going to do same thing I've been doing all year. They wanted to power football, set up the pass, and we then had success with that. It was, I mean, super back and forth. It's just that that drive at the end. It's just one of those games, like, you just got to tip your hat to them. It was a crushing loss, and it was a great game, but when you're so close and you see your opponent put together a 9-minute drive that just milks the hell out of the clock, and then on top of that, cap it off with a touchdown. I mean, sucks being on the end of it. And there were plays along the way that we were like, oh, damn, if we just gotten that one, that could have sealed it. But it's definitely one of the better Big Ten championships that I've seen in a while. And you just gotta tip your hat to him, because it was a hell of a game.
That was not at all how I processed it, pal. Not at all. I was not tipping my hat to shit. I was hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it was crushing for sure. God, yeah, I remember tears coming off, shedding some tears running off that field. I mean, the fans though, man, like the fans, everyone stood up and was standing ovation, and even though we had lost on the way out, and It was a powerful moment, but like I said, at the same time, it was a great game, and they played awesome. They made just a couple more plays than we did.
You finish your career with, McCaffrey ran all over us, basically. That's the only way to put it. You could describe trying to chase him around, but pretty sure we all got a pretty clear picture of it at this point. I mean, it was impossible. No one could fucking touch him. And your career ends at Iowa. Describe from then, that point to now, and what you're doing now, and what's life been like after football?
Life after football, man. So, I mean, I guess I trained for the draft. Did the pro day. Actually, I don't know. I feel like I had some decent numbers that I put up for all that. And got a shot with Chicago. Went out there for a rookie camp with Nate was there. And then Hilly was there too. So we at least had a couple of Iowa guys we could all hang out with. And that was a fun experience. Ended up not getting a shot anywhere, which was fine. I ended up going right back to school. I'd actually already started grad school. They had paid for a semester of it because I graduated in the winter of that 2015, and then mm-hmm. they got my scholarship through that year. So I was like, okay, well,
that's awesome.
Got a huge chunk of grad school for there, and then came back, finished it up. So I did a year and a half total, and then did some bartending too. I know you guys used to stop by old Bardo during that.
Bardo, baby.
Yeah. So yeah, I was doing some bartending, just school. Life was very, very different. Much more laid back. I think my typical schedule at that point was wake up, get a workout in the morning, go to class for a couple hours, and then work until 2 in the morning at the bar, and then just kind of repeat. So it's just
living the life.
Yeah. Way more relaxing than what I was used to. Grad school classes too. We're more in depth, but they weren't as like busy work. Mm-hmm. It was a couple tests and throughout the year. So it was just a way different lifestyle than I was used to. And then, after that year, I'm up in Minneapolis now.
Mm-hmm.
I work for a structural engineering company up here called Erickson Road and Associates.
Sounds fancy.
Firms. They always want to use the last names of everyone.
Yep.
Yep. And so it just hit 3 years in July. I am taking the PE exam here to be a licensed engineer in April. So I've been studying for that. Just kind of dove in now.
So you're about to be legit, huh?
That's the plan, at least.
And then you're, and then what, and then how long until Fisher is on the back end of a name firm?
Great question.
Is that the actual goal someday?
Yeah, I would like to be a firm or a partner of a firm.
Name partner.
I don't know if it needs to be my name necessarily on it, but
yeah.
Yeah, that would be the goal eventually.
And you do CrossFit now.
I do. I dabble.
CrossFit. I don't know. You're probably the first guest that's come on that's that actually their fitness regimen is CrossFit. So no one else gives a shit, but I love it.
Oh, dude, it's a ton of fun. Challenging, like so many aspects to it. So for someone who has like the perfectionist personality and things like that, it works well for me because there's always something to get better at.
Always something. Yeah. How's your handstand pushups?
Not too bad.
Cool.
Open's coming around. I'm sure you know about that.
Oh yeah, open. Yeah. I'm currently in the middle of like a pure strength cycle, so my conditioning is trash. But I don't work out at like a gym or anything, so I won't do well in the open. But I think maybe next year, like I might try and like make a push for. Like that second, I don't know if you've kept up with like the second online qualifier and then the
quarterfinals or whatever.
Quarterfinals and then semifinals. I might try and make a push for like quarterfinals next year. I think I have the ability to. Top 10% of everybody that participates. So pretty cool. So you're living the dream. School turned into an engineer. You're about to be a legit engineer and we just got to take you through all those memories.
Yeah, man, that was a lot of fun. I like I said, I haven't thought about that stuff in a while. Like, I still watch the games and everything, but it's kind of the point where I'm far enough removed where it's
not so much your life anymore.
Distant memories in these days. I say that. Well, I mean, what? We're coming up on 5 years now.
Yep.
6 years. Jeez.
You're old, dude.
I am old. I'm starting to feel it. That's why I was telling you last time. I was like, I'll just have like 2 beers, so at least I don't feel like shit.
So that you're not completely hungover for the interview.
Yeah, man. These days I have like two, three beers, and I actually am feeling it in the morning. It's like, what the hell? I'm not even
different than 2014.
How about when you wake up in the morning to take a piss and you can hardly move when you get out of bed? Does anybody else have that?
No, that's just you, dude. That's just you. Drake's just broken in general. Cole, we appreciate you coming on and reliving the memories with us and giving us your time.
Yeah, man. I appreciate the trips down memory lane.
Of course. Episode 191 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. If everything goes to plan, we're recording with Anthony Nelson, the Super Bowl champion, this afternoon. So you guys will get to hear that one on Thursday. Cole's way better than that guy. No, just kidding. He'll be a fun interview as well. As always, if you like the episode, tell us on social media. Thanks for being here. We will talk to you guys next time. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.